Members, we will call this meeting of Ways and Means to order on May 6, 2026. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. We appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. To ensure everyone can view, hear, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility throughout this hearing. For the safety and security and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shoutings, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodations, please speak with our sergeant staff. They're identified by the gold ties. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits, which must be strictly observed. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for reentry if you leave the hearing room. Failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room, or our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. Thank you for your cooperation and participation in the legislative process. With that, co-chair Torkelson, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Mr. Chair, and I recommend their approval.
Thank you. Minutes have been moved for approval. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes approved. Members, we only have three items. We're going to add a budget resolution as well, but we have three items on the agenda, and I'm looking forward to discussion. We will go first to the budget resolution. Could we please have nonpartisan staff walk us through that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So in your packets, you should have an amendment and then a tracking sheet. And on the amendment, it references on line 3 a new amount of total spending that reflects the bills before Ways and Means, and it is now $71.7 million. And this reflects the addition of the Human Services Finance Bill that was heard, the Payment Portal Bill that was heard, and then this also includes the Impending Claims Bill as well.
Thank you, Ms. Adrians. I will move Amendment A02 to be adopted for this budget resolution. All those in favor of Amendment A02, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Amendment passes. Up first, we'll have House File 5074. Representative Friedrichs, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There is an amendment. Do you want to move the amendment first?
Yes, please.
There's an amendment to the bill labeled A26. I will offer A26 amendment. Representative Friedrich, please speak to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill was introduced before we were able to have the meeting of the claims subcommittee. And so the amendment represents the outcomes of the joint subcommittee on claims.
Any discussion of the amendment? All those in favor of the acceptance of the amendment A26, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment accepted. Please proceed with your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. So the claims subcommittee is purpose is to oversee any tort claims against the state. Often it can be if someone is incarcerated, maybe they had their property taken or damaged by staff, and it's documented that they were supposed to have something, and then all of a sudden it was taken into possession by the staff at a facility, and then it was damaged while in their possession. But we also have exoneration claims in here too. It actually represents the majority of the funding of this bill. Is someone was incarcerated for almost 20 years. It is the longest exoneration that we have seen before the subcommittee. I think the longest before this was 8 years, which is why the number is so high. The person was in their late teens when they were incarcerated, and then they were almost 40 when they were let out. And I cannot imagine having the formative years of a person's life being taken from them, which is why the number is so large this year. But that's the bulk of this bill. It's going to be those three claims for people who serve time and should not have, and then the rest is going to be smaller property claims.
Any discussion to the bill, members? Co-Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is something that we do on a regular basis. This one is a bit higher than normal because of the unusual circumstances of that very lengthy inappropriate incarceration. I recommend members vote yes.
Thank you, Co-Chair Torkelson. Any further discussion? I will say before you close, Representative Friedrichs, that, you know, I think the situation in this one, even though, although inappropriate and allows for the high amount that we have, when we do these claims, it does show that systemically, when we find that there's a problem, we can address that problem. And although it doesn't give the person the time back in their life, I do think it is appropriate for us to show Minnesotans that we can see when there's a wrong been done and we try to redress that wrong. So thank you for bringing this bill, and close to your bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as a detail about how these numbers come to, it's not actually the subcommittee that initially, we didn't just decide pull a number out of thin air. The individual with his lawyers goes through a court process, and it was a recommendation by the courts too. So that's just a little detail on that. But I appreciate the committee's support. Thank you.
Thank you. I will renew my motion to refer House File 5074 as amended to be recommended for placement on the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Bill passes. You're on your way, sir. Up next, we have House File 3093. Representative Greenman, please make your way to the table. I will move that House File 3093 be recommended for placement on the general register. Representative Greenman, we do have an amendment. Would you like that amendment now, or would you like to discuss amendment now?
We can amendment now. Yeah.
There's an amendment. I will offer the A4 amendment. Representative Greenman, please briefly describe your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a comfort language worked out with the cable association. We sort of all agreed on the premise of the statute and that this does not touch any of the underlying subdivisions, but they wanted this language, and we're happy to comply.
Any discussions of the amendment, members? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the A4, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Please proceed with your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill implements a simple concept that entities who steal from the state government shouldn't be eligible for government grants. The bill bars any organization from receiving state grants if that entity or its subsidiary has been found to have violated Minnesota's fraud statutes, including misclassification fraud, criminal fraud, theft of public funds, and related violations that skim from public coffers. It closes a gap in 16B that we did a couple years ago by adding minimum eligibility criteria to the current 16B pre-assessment framework to identify and debar potential grantees that violate Minnesota law. It requires certification of compliance that a potential grantee is in good legal standing and paying their taxes, is paying in compliance with Minnesota state programs, workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, and paid leave, does not have repeated state or federal violations of prevailing wage or wage theft over the past 3 years, does not have organizational leadership that has been criminally convicted for failure to pay funds, medical assistance fraud, or other fraud crimes, and is not already barred from state, federal, or state or federal agencies from receiving funds. This minimum criteria applies to potential grantees and related entities to prevent bad actors from getting around the legal restrictions by adding and setting up a new business under someone else's name, but with the same control. I learned about this gap in our 16B pre-assessment framework while working on and chairing a misclassification fraud task force. The OLA's 2024 report on misclassification found that in addition to impact on workers, misclassification affects state and federal government finances through, quote, lower program and tax revenue, or increased reliance on government services. And in 2025, as we've talked about in the Labor Committee quite a bit, the North Star Policy Institute estimated that misclassification fraud cost Minnesota between $506 million and $1.3 billion, which includes unrealized tax incomes, payments into the UI Trust Fund, and workers' compensation premiums. Misclassification fraud, all of the other kinds of fraud here are fraud that cheat workers, they cheat citizens, and they steal from our public programs. This bill protects our public coffers by raising the stakes for any employer or any entity that tries to defraud our UI Trust Fund, that tries to defraud our other programs and payroll taxes. And it prevents them from stealing from these programs and then getting more government grants. Well, we have been advancing policies to enforce and deter fraud across our public programs, and this is one of the areas that on the Fraud Prevention Committee we've talked a lot about, making sure that when someone is violating our laws, stealing from the government, they are not able to use our siloed system in order to go get additional public funds. Ensuring that these policies are in place, that we are vetting folks who have already violated the law from getting more public funds is the right and simple thing to do. This is actually based on a law we currently have on the books, the Responsible Contractor Law, which is 16C. It's built on that framework, working with admin and others to make sure it fits into our already accomplished goals. It's a common sense part of our work to both stop fraud, to address misclassification fraud, and to ensure that if you violate our laws, you are not getting more public dollars. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And with that, I'd ask for your support and look forward to discussion.
Thank you, Representative. Members, any questions? Chair Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman. We agree that fraud is wrong, and I appreciate the bill's intent here. I think I'm having real concern that it didn't go through our committee. I know it came in later. I want to see what labor has to say more about this. I know that when the responsible contractor bill came through a couple years ago, again, there was a lot of bumpy roads to get that rolled out smoothly and properly. There was a lot of contractors that didn't understand this. I just say that this needs to go to a committee hearing and to hear a lot more detail. I want to just understand this better about the whole enterprise system is very broad. Again, I understand that the intent is right. I'm with you on the grant part, the fraud part. I just think this needs to be dealt with a lot more in depth with other agencies. How does this affect enterprise-wide? We want to stop the fraud just as much, but I fear that this bill is way too broadly written. I want to dive into it further and deeper when we've got more time. I can't support the bill today, Representative Greenman, but I like the intent of it. I think we have to do more work on this to get it right, but again, I'm glad your amendment came through to help firm up the BEAD stuff that we talked about, but I just can't support it today, Representative. Thank you.
Rep. Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that is disappointing, and I had this language in front of you for a couple of months. Now, I want for members to understand what this bill does, because there's a lot of underlying cross-references to statutes in criminal code, in labor code, in tax code, and it changes none of them. It does not impact those. Otherwise, it would have to go through all those committees. What this does is say in the Department of Admin is requiring people to certify that they're in compliance with those other laws. It does not change compliance structures for those other laws. And so I think under your analysis, Baker, I think most laws would have to go through almost all committees if they touch more than just that jurisdiction. But this is purely, and what it says to the Department of Admin is they have to set up a system where people say they're complying with the laws they're already required to comply with, and they're telling people, or they're telling the administration if they have a violation that they've been cited for. We actually did talk about this bill when we talked about misclassification, and I think that potentially, I don't know if Representative Pinto wants to speak to it, but it's not a labor bill, it's not a public safety bill, it's not a tax bill, it is a state government bill about government contracts, and I think that the language makes that really clear. And I've talked to many of you about it over the last couple of months, so it's disappointing to hear that now.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenman, thanks for advancing this. I guess I'll be interested to hear from Chair Baker if he's willing to share about his concerns about the breadth of the bill. I'm going to push back pretty hard on the idea that this bill would have needed to be heard in our committee, the Jobs Committee that Chair Baker and I co-chair. I'll note the bill was introduced in April of 2025, referred to the State Government Committee. That committee reported it out, had a hearing, I think, in late February. I want to compare House File 1234 from Chair Scott This is a bill that also relates to state government, as this one does, and talks about contracting and subcontracting, participating in public improvement projects. It's a bill that was referred to our committee, and Chair Baker and I agreed that it did not belong in our committee. It was actually then referred back to state gov and then ended up being sent to Ways and Means. That bill, I think, arguably had more connection to our committee than this bill. The only connection to the Jobs Committee about this bill is that one of the factors, or a couple of the factors, relating to whether an entity can receive a grant is whether the entity has complied with work and labor laws. But again, if we use that sort of standard, as Representative Greenman said, another one is compliance with Department of Revenue registration requirements. Are we going to send every bill through every committee? So I'm going to push back pretty hard against my co-chair. I see no reason that this bill would have needed to be heard in our committee. And although it was introduced more than a year ago, I think all of our colleagues or all of us have had plenty of chances to review the bill. So I think the question is, what's the substance? What are the substantive concerns with the bill? And I don't know what they would be. The way that I look at this bill is it's requiring that it's consistent very much with conversations we've had in the Fraud Prevention Committee and others as well, to say that if an entity is defrauding taxpayers, is not doing the right things, we want to make sure that that entity is not going to be receiving public funds. Very simple, very clear, and so I would hope the members would support the bill. I will, Mr. Chair, ask for a roll call on this bill, and would hope. Oh, you don't have to raise hands.
All right, members, roll call requested, roll call granted. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Claiborne.
And I'll just note that I'm hoping that that we'll get the substantive thoughts from our colleagues regarding any concerns about this bill.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And Representative Greenman, I want to thank you for bringing this bill forward. It was heard in state government, as it was mentioned earlier. And I would just like to let the committee know that this deals with 16B.981, and the caption of those statutes says financial review of grant and business subsidy recipients. And this is a very common sense bill which would make sure that we root out fraud as it appears in misclassification. And so I just want to thank you for your hard work on this bill. I know that misclassification is a category that you have been working on, not just in this session, but on previous sessions as well. And so I appreciate your continued push forward on this. Misclassification, as you stated so clearly, robs the individual who's performing work. It robs the state of people who are expecting an outcome from the resources of the state. And it harms everyone. So thank you very much for your work on this bill.
Chair Kosnick.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. This bill was heard. I had the opportunity to see your presentation in State Gov Finance. At that time, we also had heard Representative Patty Anderson bill, House File 3563. Did you get an opportunity to discuss her bill and as you and I talked to see if that was something you'd incorporate in this bill? Did you get a chance to talk to her about her bill? That was similar in nature to your bill here.
Rep. Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do remember you saying that, and I do remember asking, because I wasn't familiar with that bill. I am not, it was deadline week, and so I'm not sure. It is not incorporated in this bill, but it was probably for lack of following up. What I will say is I do think that there are, I have also not that familiar with Representative Scott's bill, but I think, and then I know admin had a package. I know that a set of members across the both of our caucuses have been working on grants in that context. So I'm sure that there are many bills that deal with grants and deal with preventing people who have maybe incorrectly or fraudulently deprived state coffers. And I think that however they're coming, whether they're in omnibus bills or in or as a standalone, it would be good to make sure that they all work together. And I think that that's above my pay grade.
Any follow-up, Chair Costing?
Thank you. Representative Greenman, I think your pay grade is quite high as a state representative, and we did talk about having that discussion. And her bill dealt with the state who provides licensing in certain areas. If somebody that holds a state license is also similarly convicted of fraud or theft, similar to your bill, that the state licensing boards should withhold or consider withholding those licenses. And I think that is a very good fit in this bill, and that's what we talked about. And you were, I believe, in the committee hearing room when the Anderson bill was being heard. I may be mistaken. You're shaking your head, so I might be mistaken on that. But it's unfortunate that you didn't have the opportunity to talk with her about it. I gave you the bill number, and I'm disappointed that that conversation never happened, and really disappointed that that's not incorporated to strengthen your bill. And I think that's something that certainly should be considered. It's unfortunate that partisanship got in the way of Patty, Representative Anderson's bill. So I hope that as this bill continues to work, maybe get a hearing in Chair Baker's committee, that would be part of the future discussion.
Rep. Raymond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if that bill is going through every jurisdiction that has a licensing board, but that would probably be 12 or 13 committees. So I'm not sure if you or your colleagues raised that issue on that. I hope you didn't, because I don't think that bill probably, if it was in 16B or 16C, it's a state government bill. I am not asking about, this is not an omnibus bill, it's not a package. It very well could go along with Representative Anderson's bill. Anderson and Representative Anderson and I on the Fraud Prevention Committee have a lot in common. And so it's disappointing to hear that you would want to block a bill that is about preventing fraud, preventing people who have already been found to have defrauded the state government, because it doesn't include an unrelated bill that I haven't even had a chance to vote on. I may or may not support it. That just doesn't, those things don't align, and I don't think that that's how we should do our policymaking, especially taking on the issue of people who are ripping off workers and our government.
Chair Scott.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I just had a question on the verification of compliance piece. And as I read that on page 5, and it just seems to me that we're just going to take their word for it. When they say that they're complying, we're going to take their word for it that they're complying. And so if you could speak to any assurances that they're not just pulling the wool over on the eyes of government folks, that'd be great.
Rep. Raymond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm glad you brought that up, because we built this on the same framework that admin administers, both the responsible contractor law in 16C and also the pre-risk assessment that we do grants that we did the last couple of years. I, in a budget year, would love to have to put the robust and potentially upfront verification. That has not been something that I think that either party has sounded interested. I think that it would probably cost tens of millions of dollars. What this does is improve from where we are now. And I will be honest, when I started working on this bill, it was because I saw there was an article about an organization that received grants from the state and had misclassified all of their workers and had a standing DLI misclassification violation when they got that order. And the reason that happened was because there was no information in front of the agency that was verifying the grants. And so we, in the last couple of years, we actually put in pre-risk assessment into statute, which requires a set of smaller checks, very basic ones. What this does is it actually says if you violate this, it's an eligibility criteria that prevents you from getting a grant. And so if you, Representative Scott, want to work on what would be, I think, step two in a budget year of passing this bill and then talking about the ways that we would want to give the administration more upfront verification, I would love to work with it. Right now, this is why the responsible contractor law has been important, is what this does is say before you apply for a grant, you have to verify all of these things, and it gives that information to the folks who are going through that that pre-risk assessment, information that they don't currently have. And so I think that this is a really important step. I see it as a gap between about the law that we, the really strong law that we passed 2 years ago, and I think we should fill that gap now.
Any follow-up, Chair Scott?
It just seems like our government employees ought to be verifying the verification. And I don't see where that's, maybe I'm missing some. I just figured any time government grant money was given out, I thought it was the duty of the state employees to make sure that the person was grant worthy, that they were not operating illegally, that they were actually going to be doing what they say they were going to do with the money, all of those things. And so, yeah, when I read this language, I'm like, but it's the responsibility of government to make sure you're, if you're giving out state money, that the people are have passed the smell test and been verified from the government agency perspective. So thank you for the line of question.
Chair Claiborne.
Thank you very much. And I just wanted to clarify that these two bills that were referenced, Representative Anderson and Representative Greenman, are in totally different chapters of law. And so I just wanted to thank Representative Greenman for keeping hers very clean so that we know exactly, as she said, there are lots of cross-references in it, but it really has to do with the administration's grant process, procedures, and it's very clean, and I would encourage everyone to please vote yes. It's an important bill for stopping fraud in our state.
Chair Cotiza-Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for bringing this forward. It is my understanding that just like a few days ago, or maybe toward the end of last week, that you know we had the largest recapture of some of the issues in terms of worker misclass and businesses who are avoiding paying their employees what they are meant to be paying them, and I think that sometimes we get caught up in the big numbers, whether or not that fraud has been verified, whether or not people have been convicted. You know, we get caught up in saying really big numbers because people are like, wow, that's so much money. And it is, and none of it is acceptable. So I think that that's why, you know, when you're looking at 25,000 or more, when somebody has repeatedly failed to pay required wages or penalties on one or more projects over and over and over again, $25,000 is a lot of money to the vast majority of Minnesotans. And when it happens again and it happens again and it happens again, all of that adds up to a lot of money, and it adds up to bigger numbers. But if we allow ourselves to brush it under the rug and say, oh, this isn't that big of a deal because, you know, it's only impacting workers of a certain business, or, you know, they probably won't do it again, or it's not something that we need to investigate and block them from receiving any state grant monies. There are people who are their whole business model, right, is to find loopholes and find ways to cut corners, and we are doing everything that we can to make that stop. So it kind of is confusing to me that when we're going after nonprofits, when we are talking about childcare businesses who, you know, again, with the big numbers, whether or not those numbers have been validated, this money matters too. And I think that it's really important that we do our best to capture fraudsters, whether they're working in nonprofit, but for-profits are actually doing fraud too. And so anybody who is taking money away out of the pockets of Minnesota workers and out of the pockets of the taxpayers of Minnesota, we need to take action on that. And so I think this is a really simple bill that would allow us to move in that direction and say, enough is enough, and it doesn't matter what kind of business you are. It doesn't matter what kind of industry you're working in, but people deserve to be paid the wages that they have earned, and we need to take a stand. So I appreciate it, and I would really strongly recommend a green vote.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just also want to, you know, thank our public servants, our government employees. So often they get disparaged, and I just, you know, we continue to ask them to do more and more with less and less.
And so we know you're working hard. But to this bill, I was just kind of curious, what industry does most of this misclassification happen in?
Rep. Grayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the question. And I just want to note that this deals with so much more than misclassification fraud. So I'm going to talk about misclassification fraud, but I want to point you to it also deals with false claims to public officials, medical assistance fraud, theft, insurance fraud, state lottery fraud, fraudulent financial statements, credit card fraud, failure to pay state funds. And the thing about misclassification is, and we had in our labor committee, we will get a study coming up. One of the construction is a big place that we see that. We also see it in the service industry, in the live events industry. And for folks who haven't been following this issue, it's not just wage theft. Our unemployment trust fund probably has lost between $200 and $300 million every year because of misclassification fraud. Our payroll taxes at the both state and federal level are losing real dollars. That is a fraud on public funds and public programs in the same way as we have been talking about, and we hear both sides of the aisle, but we hear a lot. You all tell us that we're not doing enough on fraud. On fraud on public programs. There's a fraud on public programs. And frankly, this language has been around a while. It is built on a very a strong foundation of something that we've already been implementing. And so I appreciate the question. It is something we need to deal with. We should also, all of these kinds of fraud, we should be ensuring that if you commit them and violate them and get a felony or a violation of from an agency, you shouldn't be able to get government contracts. That's all this bill does.
Chair Cagle, you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you. So kind of staying in my lane here between like transportation and commerce, seeing that construction is one of the places where this happens most, that should be really concerning, especially for transportation, MnDOT, housing. I mean, that's state money that is literally being stolen out of the pockets of not only workers, but our roads, our bridges, our infrastructure. And so it's not just the workers that are being hit, it's us and the products that these workers are producing. Because they're getting money stolen from them, we're not able to do as many infrastructure projects. And so, you know, I've been on a bit of a tear about how privatizing government is the problem. And when the profit motive is the biggest reason that we're doing this stuff, you can definitely tell because services get worse and people get richer. And so I really just don't understand why we wouldn't go after everybody committing fraud and why we just focus on certain groups. So thank you, Representative Grayman.
We have two more members on, but before that, Rep. Grayman, did you say in your comments, did you say 200 to 300 million per year?
Yeah, and that's from a North Star policy report. And actually, we will get, maybe I have it. I believe that the UI trust fund was in the 200 to 300. The whole estimate per year that the state loses is between $500 million and $1.3 billion. When we get this report back in next February, it will be not an outside organization having done it, but we have funded a study where we'll get more and I think concrete numbers. My understanding is that estimate is an underestimate because they don't have access to the non-cash economy pieces of this. So,
thank you, Rep. Grayman. Joe Baker.
Thanks. Representative Grayman, did you say that you did ask for a fiscal note on this? I know this isn't a budget year, but help me with that. You talked about next year's budget season, budget session. What was that answer?
Rep. Grayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill does have a fiscal note of $20,000. We have, which was the lowest, I think it's $13,000 this year, $6,000 next year, which reflects the fact that the reason that it looks like that is we built it into the pre-risk assessment that we have funded and is now up and running in admin. What I was responding to is what is currently built on a verification, which is people provide this information, and then the current review process, which is already happening, this is just more information as part of that. I think what Representative Scott was asking about in terms of if there is sort of a more, if we are asking the agencies for information and not just the people, that's a different process, and that fiscal note will look different. The talking to the administration, and I think that they talked to both Chair Torkelson and Chair Frazier, but we are not going to fund it because it's $20,000 to work they're already doing, and they're okay with that.
Mr. Chair Baker, any follow-up?
I think my caution here is the idea is right, but I wonder why aren't our agencies doing this now and double-checking, verifying these kinds of questions. You said you learned some things during the conversations you were having over the summertime with the misclass committee that you were on. I don't know that I buy into all the numbers of the estimates of the misclass, but you and I have also agreed we have a problem in the state of Minnesota with that issue. I don't want employers misclassing actual W-2 employees, and we've got to find ways of finding those things. My fear, again, is as you write this as a very broad manner over all enterprises, this is going to turn into a mega cost in a budget year, in my fear, because then all agencies are going to get their fingers in this, and they're going to tell us, well, we don't know what to do because in this language it's not clear, it's not really concise. I'd like to hear again in my committee, what do some of the agencies that we oversee, what do they say about this? I'm just, again, part of this is also from my long conversation I had yesterday with the senior leaders at DEED about the way grants have gone out over the last couple of years, trying to get our arms around fraud, how important it is, and the level that it went out in 2023 of $1.4 billion in nonprofits and work-related issues and economic developments, when it normally is around $50 million a year, and that one year went out like just $1.4 billion. It was something that they couldn't handle, but they did it. They had to do it because legislators told them they had to do it. What I learned from that yesterday was we don't have all the right answers, and they didn't listen to the agency that said at many times during that process, I don't think we can handle this. I want to get more into this. I want to get more details of this. And again, I want to support this concept, but we should be doing this now about asking who has had fraud, who has had grants before, have there ever been issues with these companies before, nonprofits, profits. I like it. I'm just asking for more time to vet it out. I'm sorry it didn't come in front of our committee. I wish it would have. But again, I'm worried that this is going to turn into something much, much bigger than what's in front of us today.
Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Greenman, for all the time and energy you've put into this bill. It has been really thoroughly vetted from what I can tell. And what I'm confused about is that, you know, sometimes we do have to give the agencies more tools in their toolbox and also tell them what they need to do. And this is just that added layer. We talk about having our agencies be able to talk to each other so that we could stop fraud. This is another layer and another step to make sure that folks aren't being defrauded. And it seems to me that towards the end of session here, voting on real bills that will get something accomplished is much better than just talking around the problem. So I just want to thank you for bringing this forward as an important tool for our agencies to have.
Chair Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and sorry for speaking again. I want to respond to a question from Chair Scott, which relates to the statement under oath and kind of wondering what the consequences of that. That under 609.48 would be a felony if it's a false statement under oath. Which I think is a significant disincentive besides, you know, wouldn't get the grant funding, everything else listed there, but just a reminder that that would at that point be a crime. I heard my co-chair talk about the desire to have agencies review. I'm looking at lines 3.15 and on, these minimum eligibility criteria. I will say I don't care whether DEED or DLI, if they were to say, hey, we want to give a grant to somebody who's not in good standing with the Secretary of State or doesn't possess a valid federal tax identification number or any of these other things. I kind of don't care what those agencies have to say. Like, my thought would be these are things that before somebody's going to get a grant, they should be complying with. And it seems pretty simple that for us to spell out our expectations as a state legislature make a lot of sense. If some of this is being complied with currently, that's wonderful. If there's some way that it's not, We want to make sure that they are, at the very least, lay that out. And I feel like, back to Chair Scott, your intuition that agencies should be doing this now, or that these make a lot of sense, I totally agree with. And I think that that's part of the point here, is to say this is our intuition, and we're putting that down on paper to be absolutely sure that it happens. I don't see anything in any of this list that we would not want to have grantees comply with. I haven't heard anybody say anything in particular on this list either. Mm-hmm. And let's make sure that the agencies are following our direction. Thank you.
Chair Greenman, close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what this bill does, just for folks who are following along at home, is say if you've already violated the law and defrauded us, whether it's a criminal statute, whether it's worker misclassification, whether it's credit card fraud, that you will not and should not get state grants. That's it. And it requires you, when you're applying for a grant, to verify that you're in compliance with our laws. That's it. In this conversation, I heard that agencies should already be doing it, but the policy needs more work. I heard it's too broad, but I should add stuff to it and it not be broad enough. I don't think any of those are what I heard when I was working with Representative Schultz, when I handed the language annotated so folks knew what was in it to many of you around this room, to folks in StateGov. And so what it feels like to me, not imputing motives, is you just don't want to vote for this bill, which is confusing, again, because this is a bill that I worked with MMB on, with admin on. I got technical assistance from DLI, from Deed, and it is built on our the work that we have done, I believe in a bipartisan way, on pre-risk assessment. It is built on the conversations we've been having for 2 years in the Fraud Prevention and Government Oversight Committee. It's built on the work that I think state government particularly you've been having on making sure that departments like admin and MMB have what they need to enforce the rules, and that we don't let our silos, which is what's happening now, prevent us from ensuring that, again, if people aren't following the law, they aren't continuing to get government money. This is no different than the bills we passed to say if you're committing Medicaid fraud, you shouldn't be able to get SNAP dollars, or if you're a provider who has committed daycare fraud, CCAP fraud, you shouldn't be able to be in the Medicaid program. It is the same concept, and it is the same, built on the same work, and so this should be an easy vote. I hope you'll do it with me. If we don't do it this year, and again, this has been around a while, this is not, it's a simple, a straightforward bill, but if we don't do it, what it means is you might be standing in the way of us preventing people from getting grants who have violated other laws, and that's not going to be on me. I think we should be able to do this. This has gotten both bipartisan participation and support, and I hope you'll vote for it today.
Members, we have had, thank you, Rep. Greenman, for making this bill. Members, we have had many conversations about fraud throughout the legislative body, throughout the last couple years. If these numbers are anywhere close, these estimates of $200-300 million a year out of our UI trust fund, or $500 million to $1.2 billion, if these numbers are anywhere near accurate, these will be the highest numbers of any fraud within the state that we know of. And we have an obligation and duty to try to prevent that, to make sure that the money that we're providing to folks are absolutely being appropriated for the appropriate reasons. So please vote accordingly. I will renew my motion to refer House File 3093 as amended to be placed on the general register. Clerk, please take the roll.
Co-Chair
Frazier votes aye.
Chair Torkelson.
No.
Vice Chair Scott.
No.
Vice Chair Igbaje.
Aye.
Representative Acomb.
Aye.
Representative Backer.
No.
Representative Baker. Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Gomez.
Aye.
Representative Heitzman.
No.
Representative Igo.
Igo, no.
Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Coutines of Wattoon.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick.
No.
Representative Creshaw.
No.
Representative Lilly.
Lily, aye.
Representative Mueller. Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Knorr.
Aye.
Representative Novotny.
No.
Representative Olson. Representative Pinto.
Aye.
Representative Schumacher?
Schumacher, no.
Representative Swedzinski?
Swedzinski, no.
Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative West? Representative Joachim?
Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, West. Chair. Representative West?
I feel so affronted. Nobody called my name.
We did. We called your name.
You're right before you.
Oh, I just wasn't listening. No.
We know that.
Thank you, Chair West.
Okay.
13-13. On a vote of 13-13, it is a tie. It means the motion fails. Sorry, Rep. Breeman. All right. Co-Chair Torkelson, would you have a preview for tomorrow?
The preview tomorrow is that we probably will meet at noon. We don't have an agenda yet, but as everyone knows, this is a very fluid time in our calendar. So we are intending to meet at noon, but we'll only meet if we have something to do.
Thank you, Chair. With that, members, we are adjourned.